And now it's time to take a break from all that hatred and anger with a man who's known as a unifier and a bridge builder. It's time to sit back and relax for some peace and calm and a message of love from me, Billy Roper, and The Roper Report, right here on RadioArian.com. On this week's The Roper Report, we'll talk about Christian apologetics and monarchism and National Socialism. That is, the two most controversial subjects, which most people would never want to broach, religion and politics. And then we'll talk about Trump's future and our own, right now on The Roper Report.
You are listening to Radio Aryan for an alternative to the anti-white system. On RadioAryan.com.
I think they're getting out of hand. Well, you know what happened to those who complain. We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fire outside to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're at a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control because they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material in the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, and welcome back to The Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization Broadcast, right here on Radio Aryan, on the RadioAryan.com network. Every week we bring to you news and political commentary from just to the right of Albert Speer, and this week we're going to be responding to some reader questions about last week's broadcast first. Then we're going to talk about religion, politics, and other spectator sports. You will not want to miss the discussion. Last week, I talked about Christian identity and other faiths and other religions that were part of the alt-right and the white nationalist movement. I did a compare and contrast on some of them, and I also discussed my particular faith, my religious perspective, which is Christian identity. Some of the listener responses were positive, a very few were negative, but some of them were quizzical. They needed clarification. One of the questions which required clarification was about faith, because a lot of my listeners seem to be either atheist or agnostic or having troubles, as all of us admittedly do from time to time, with the question of faith and belief and accepting something without prima facie physical evidence proving it. But really, that's what faith is. Faith is believing in something which you perhaps cannot tangibly touch or taste or smell or hold in your hands. It's believing in something based on non-direct evidence and on what you actually intrinsically, emphatically feel inside through revealed truth. So when I think of faith, to answer the questions about where my faith comes from and how I can defend it, I have to rely on others who have come before me and who are more intellectually grounded and better read, more scholarly, and certainly greater authorities on the subject than myself. There's a system of theology called apologetics, and it's not called apologetics because we have anything as Christians to apologize about or for, but rather because apologetics means a Christian's way of defending his faith to non-believers. And it's as old as the Bible itself, certainly the New Testament. Going back to the ancient Greek, the Apostle Paul engaged in apologetics in his own writings to the different Christian churches in the Roman Empire. Apologetics is an opportunity for us as Christians to use logic and science and rationality, things which one would hope might appeal to non-Christians to encourage them to be, as they claim to be, open-minded towards the idea of faith and our Christian belief. One of the stumbling blocks holding Christians back, which also holds non-Christians back, is what I discussed last week, the problem that today's mainstream Judeo-Christian churches are, to a large degree, anti-white, certainly anti-racist, which is part and parcel of the same thing, because anti-racism really is anti-white. The Judeo-Christian misconception of who God's chosen people are and the counterbalancing weight of who they are not is one of the most serious issues when it comes to Judeo-Christians, especially evangelical Protestant Christians here in the southern United States today, becoming racially conscious and standing up for their people. Because of their misconception that the Jews are God's chosen people and therefore they cannot be collectively criticized regardless of what they do, they are trapped into being Zionist Judeo-Christians. I discussed last week how that can be overcome, and we'll talk about that in future episodes as well. But for this week, I would like to talk about, from an apologetics viewpoint, faith. Now, there are many ways that you can defend belief, just like there are many ways that you can attack unbelief. But instead of attacking people's lack of faith and pointing out that atheism and other non-Christian religious viewpoints are as much religious faiths as their purported lack of faith is, I'll defend my own rather than attacking theirs. And I'll say simply that for hundreds of years, for thousands of years, men like St. Thomas Aquinas have been pointing out the irrationality of the belief that everything that we see in the cosmos, in the universe, just happened as an accident, as some random electrical charge into random chemical pools, because the randomness of the universe does not allow for a dice throw producing life. If that had been the case, then we would see life a lot more abundantly than we do throughout the known solar system, much less the galaxy, much less the universe. And going back to men like Swinburne, he reached the design conclusion through mathematics, through rationality, and by proving through what's called the Bayesian probability theory of life, that randomness cannot account for the creation of life. As I've mentioned before, I firmly believe in a God who is a creator, and that God being capable of setting into motion processes which would continue without his thumb being held down onto every part of the water cycle or the ecological cycle or even natural selection. That's why I don't see any contradiction between science and faith, between natural selection and my Christian identity religion, in fact. But that spark, that divine essence, which gave birth to life and gave birth to us and gave us as Adamic whites a spirit, a soul, something which the other beast of the field does not have. Well, that was not random. That was not an accident. And I know that a lot of you who are listening perhaps haven't read a lot of Christian identity religious material, and that's fine. But you know in your hearts what I'm talking about when I say that sometimes in life, things happen to us and with us that we cannot really explain based on the random odds of it happening. You can toss a dice so many times, but eventually, if you keep hitting snake eyes, you know it's just bad luck. The odds are that's not going to happen every time in a row. But we also have good things that happen in our life. Things that can only be explained through something supernatural. Something larger than ourselves. Something more than just the random odds of a gambler. I'll give you one small example which might seem petty, but all of creation in the grand scheme of things in comparison to the cosmos and all of time and all of space is petty. So this is no less petty than anything else. And it's a personal thing that I think a lot of you can relate to. A little bit over a year ago, my father passed away, and one of the things which he left me, which is now mine as the estate becomes settled, is his old pickup truck. And the first coincidence, if you will, is that his pickup truck was about 2 hours away, and I fired it up and drove it home and got it to the driveway, turned the key off, and the truck would not start again. The ignition had locked up. I had actually stopped and refueled along the way. Now, that truck could have not fired up and left where it had been sitting for several months. It could have made it to the service station and not gotten off the parking lot, and I would have been stranded there and had to have called a tow truck. It made it to where it needed to be, right to my driveway, and parked, and then did not start again. I tried to start it a few times and watched some YouTube videos about how I might fix the problem, and eventually, after deep consideration, I thought that I might do more harm than good because, frankly, I'm not a mechanic, and so I was going to hire one. But first, I thought that I would try to save as much money as possible by going to the auto parts house. And so I looked up the parts that I would need to have this ignition lock fixed. And I went to the parts house, and I began talking with them. And they said, well, it could be A, which is $29.99, or it could be B, which is $159.99, or it could be C, which is about $269. And I was looking at several hundred dollars into getting this truck going again. And really, aside from nostalgic purposes and it being my dad's truck, there's a limit, you know, on how much money it's worthwhile to put into an older vehicle. It's a 20-year-old truck. And so instead of putting out the money on two or three different parts, only one of which might be needed, I actually got the number from one of them to call a local mechanic so that he could come and look at the truck and try to determine by taking it apart what part was needed before I invested the money in. Because I didn't have just an unlimited amount of financial resources to throw into the problem, but I wanted to get it fixed if I could. And so I called the gentleman and discussed the problem with him, the local mechanic, and he said that he'd come out and look at it the next day. Well, the next day rolled around and he called and had to cancel his appointment to come and work on the truck because there had been a death of an acquaintance's family and he was tied up that day working. So he rescheduled for 2 days later. And I'll be frank with you, I'm not saying this was necessarily a lack of faith on my part or pessimism or cynicism, but sometimes in life, we don't always recognize the bigger picture. We lose perspective. We get our priorities screwed up, and I am no different from that. And so I had a failure of priorities, and I got frustrated and angry and upset at the fact that there was just one delay after another in getting this truck fixed. And in the big scheme of life and the universe, once again, it's a very petty thing, but I was upset by it. So I went out there with some wire pliers and with a rubber mallet and started working on the truck again, and I worked on it. I still could not get it to break free. I had sprayed WD-40 in, I had sprayed graphite in, and I had tapped, and I had wrestled with it for quite some time. Nothing worked. And then I took a Leatherman's pocket tool, and both hands gripping the handle of the pliers, I was able to click, click. After sitting for 5 months, the truck turned over, fired, and started, and has not stopped since. Each time I turn it off, it turns right back on with no problem. And so I was happy to call the mechanic and to tell him that I appreciated his potential help and would keep him in mind if I needed his help in the future, but that there was no need for him to come because I had been able to fix the truck. Not because I was a mechanic, but because in doing the same thing that I had been doing many countless times before, this time it had worked. Now, the mechanic could have been able to have come the day before, and that would have cost me $100 or $200. And the people at the parts house, you know, could have told me which part would work. And I may or may not have then been able to have gotten a refund on that. But from my perspective as a person of faith, I really believe that God has a time and a season for everything to fulfill His preordained plan. He did not want me to waste hundreds of dollars on getting this truck fixed in having a mechanic that I'd have to pay or having parts I'd have to buy. And he allowed me to be able to just turn the switch with the pliers and to make the truck fire up. And I don't think that it's being too tinfoil hat-ish to believe that that is actually God's work in a very small way in my life. And that's my faith. And others can ridicule that through their non-belief if they prefer to, and that's their prerogative. But for me, little small things like that, little coincidences which are really too random to be just the odds of the universe working either for or against my favor, to me, those are small proofs of God and God's will and God's intent.
Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Deutschland, die Heil! Für unseres Reiches Macht!
Help us help our people through the Cover Our People with Love Pro White Charity. P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. Cover our people with love. Helping our own and holding our own with your help.
Some organizations and activists work on bringing white nationalists to their community in what's called the Pioneer Little Europe concept, or PLE. In the Shield Wall Network, we reverse that ideology and work on bringing our communities to white nationalism, or at least to help you learn how to become a person of influence in your community so that you can cherry-pick and radicalize those who are almost there with us already. We'll teach you how to become a person of influence in your community so that you can be ready when the time comes to speak up and stand up for our people there. If you'd like to find out how you can get involved with the Shield Wall Network, we encourage you to visit the website at shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com and read the What is the Shield Wall Network section. That's shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com, where you can become a person of influence in your community today.
Young men who call themselves Nazis.
There's a reason why our ancestors would say, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven," when they would pray. There's a reason why our ancestors would actually say, when something was made impossible or too difficult, that it must not be God's will. And there's a reason why our ancestors would say, when something happened, that it was God's will. If you believe in a creator of the universe and one who has written the future, not through prophecy as man would speak prophecy, but literally has already decided before we're born how we will die and how every moment of our lives from birth to death and in between will be spent, but gives us the free will to choose, knowing beforehand what choices we will make with that free will, then you can understand how God signals to us to remind us that He is always in control. Now, within the alt-right and the white nationalist movement, it's easy to get frustrated with lack of progress. It's easy to become angry at people who just cannot seem to get the basic message of standards and principle and character and sticking to those core beliefs, not impurity spiraling. Believe me, I understand whenever you see one organization after another fall apart, whenever you see one major effort after another come to naught, whenever you see people that you have a great deal of respect for, like Ernst Zundel, who passed away yesterday, leave this mortal coil, and you think about the life that they dedicated to our cause, and you weigh how much good was accomplished, it's easy to get blackpilled. It's easy to forget that if you have faith and you believe in God, you know that we are going to win. It's inevitable. He's already written our victory out. And while we may not be able to look at the book of Revelation and understand exactly what John is seeing and describing through his 2,000 years ago perspective eyes, the reality is our fate and our future is in God's hands. And He is going to win. And therefore, if we are on His side, we will win as well. How will we know whether we are on God's side or not? Ultimately, the small differences between us do not matter. Just like the differences between us in, I believe, religious denominations really do not matter. What matters is God tells us, point blank, that whether you think of the Antichrist as being a person or whether you think of the Antichrist as being an ideology or a force to be reckoned with, because the Bible also says that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and spirits of darkness. The Antichrist system is already here and already at work, ladies and gentlemen. And the Antichrist system pushes multiracialism and interracial unity. It pushes kumbaya, one world government. It pushes tolerance and diversity, and it pushes unity, because Jesus Christ said that, "Don't think that I came to bring peace. I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword." And then in Luke, He says, "I didn't come to unite. I came to divide. I came to light a fire to burn. And what do I care if it's kindled already? Jesus came to divide the races of the species, and even further, if I may say so, to divide from within our species and within our race and within our people, those who are worthy and those who are not. And most are going to fall short. Those that are lukewarm, he's going to spit out because he wants us to be either hot or cold. Only a remnant will be saved. But for those remnants who oppose the Antichrist forces, and by that I mean those who oppose multiracialism, those who oppose diversity, those who oppose mankind's work towards a one-world government. If you are racist, then you're on God's side. At least you're acting as one of his tools, even if it's an unwitting tool. So you can choose to be a racist, unwitting tool, doing God's work, being used by him to expand his kingdom for his greater glory, to bring about his fruition of his preordained destiny for our people and for the all of creation. Or you can actually be a willing servant. You can choose to be a conscious weapon of our Lord and Master and accept your dharma, accept your duty, accept your destiny, accept the reason for your creation and your birth and your life, to fight the good fight against our race's enemies, who are by definition God's enemies. So if you prefer not to be an unwitting tool working to expand God's kingdom by bringing to fruition his plan for all of destiny, because everything and everyone is, everything from a rock to a camel to a sand nigger, is serving God's will, whether they know it or not, whether they like it or not, even atheists are doing God's bidding and God's will, serving their little small role in his plan to fulfill his preordained destiny, because he's already decided how things are going to play out, and all of us have a part to play. And, you know, the Hindus call that dharma, your destiny, your duty, your place in the universe. And if we are conscious about that, if we have faith, then we can at least have the satisfaction of knowing that we have the option of consciously being good and faithful servants, or just being tools that he uses, as he does every other part of nature which he created, to fulfill his own preordained destiny. I prefer to consciously embrace my dharma, embrace my duty, embrace my destiny as I see it, by expanding his kingdom and fighting for our people's future, because that is, I sincerely believe, his will and intent for my life. That is what faith gives to me. So whether you can look at your own lives and see positive and negative things, which you can interpret as being God giving you a nudge back on the right track here or there, that are too coincidental to be random acts of coincidence, like a toss of the dice, like a gambler, or whether you really are going to stick to your rationality and believe that you cannot defend faith, you cannot defend the existence of God that is larger than rolling the dice, then you're still going to be serving his will. It just is a question of whether or not, like in the Matrix, you're aware of whether you're plugged in or not, because you're all part of his plan. Every single one of you, whether you like it or whether you don't. Oy vey. Oy vey. Oy vey. Oy vey. Do you like books where the good guys win? You know, the kind of books that they don't want you to read? I'm Billy Roper, and I've written 14 fiction and nonfiction books from a decidedly pro-white perspective, from different genres, all of them carrying the pro-white message, hopefully one of which you'll like. I encourage you to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Books A Million or Smashwords and check them out. Or if you prefer, go the third-party route to Lulu.com, type in Billy Roper, and check out the 14 different books you have to choose from. Fiction, nonfiction, and everything in between, all from a pro-white perspective, guaranteed to excite and energize you. That's Billy Roper on your favorite internet book dealer site.
Deutschland! Sieg Heil! Deutschland! Sieg Heil!
So this little thing with my truck this week was another reminder to me, through my faith, that God is in control and that he has a plan for our lives, and that he does want good to happen to us and for us who are his good and faithful servants, even in very small things. Because the Bible says that he looks after the birds, and if he cares about them, provides for them, how much more so does he care about us, his people, to take care of us and to provide for us, even in small things, which, if you don't have your eyes open and you don't have the faith to see it, may seem just like random coincidences. So I want to thank you for that question about how I justify and how I defend my faith in Christian identity, which I discussed on last week's program entitled Keeping the Faith, which you can listen to still in the archives of RadioArian.com. Not every program will be focused strictly on my religious faith, but I also like to talk about politics for a few minutes. Some people really have been talking this last week about National Socialism. Andrew Anglin yesterday had an article on the Daily Stormer where he explained why he was not a National Socialist. And this is not going to be a commentary trashing Andrew Anglin. I want to sincerely try to answer his objections, or at least to explain my differences to his perspective. He says that National Socialism should not be adopted by whites because it was never really fully developed as a political philosophy. And I guess that's because for some neophytes, some newbies in the white nationalist movement who have not read very deeply or very broadly, it may seem that Mein Kampf is the only book that was ever written about National Socialism, but that's not the case. There have been dozens of books that are written not just in the 1920s and 30s, but before and since, about National Socialism as a political system. And like any political system, there are different nuances and interpretations of what National Socialism really means. It could mean different things to different people. Obviously, the Strasser brothers had a different interpretation of it, a more leftist interpretation, a more socialistic interpretation of National Socialism than did the first German leader, and they lost. Just like in communism, there are those who say that Lenin had it right, but Stalin misinterpreted him, and so true communism has never been started. We don't have the luxury as National Socialists of saying, well, you know, yeah, National Socialism is a good theory and a good political system. We've just never tried genuine National Socialism yet. Even though 6 million compared to 60 million that Stalin killed, you would think that we would get a second shot at it.
Hey guys, would you like a happy ending? Then do what I do and pick up one of Billy Roper's books. You'll hate to finish, but love getting there. All of Billy Roper's fiction and non-fiction books are pro-white. Go get one at Amazon.com today.
And also in communism, they can say, well, Marx had it right, but Lenin misinterpreted it. That's why you had the starvation of the Ukrainians, the Holodomor, and the Russian peasants being killed. All that unfortunateness, right? Reality is, you can interpret a political system any way you want to, whether it's capitalism or socialism or communism or national socialism or libertarianism, and you can create your own gray area in betwixt and between. Libertarian socialism was a thing for a while. Believe that? It's true. Now there's Marxist anarchism that the left espouses because they don't understand either. They're trying to combine them both. National socialism can work. I'm not saying it's the best of all political systems, but I'm certainly saying that's better than multiracial democracy and better than libertarianism, and I would say better than capitalism, because it espouses a worldview in which the purpose of the race is to improve itself through time, through eugenics, through cultural engineering and social engineering. The purpose of the state, the purpose of the government, is to be a vessel which holds the race. And that state, that government, should decide every governmental question, every foreign and domestic policy issue, based on the very simple criteria of whether something is good for the race or not. If it's good for the race, it's good. If it's bad for the race, it's bad. So the interest of the people as a whole have to, according to National Socialist theory, trump, no pun intended, the interest of the individual. So personal freedom and individual freedom is not more important than the common good or the greater good of the majority of the folk. While you yourself might want to be able to breed 20 kids with Down syndrome it's not in the best interest of the people that you're allowed to do that. So that might infringe on your personal liberty to make as many Down syndrome kids as you'd like to. Your personal liberty might tell you that you should be able to do any kind of drug that you want to and waste your life. But that's not in the best interest of our people or our race. So in that case, your civil liberties, as they're called, which, remember, are not natural liberties. They're not natural rights. Natural rights are given to us by God, by nature. We're born with them intrinsically. Civil rights are not natural rights. Civil rights are not given to you by God. Civil rights are given to you and protected artificially by the government. So you might think you have a civil right to take any kind of drug you want to and waste your life, but in reality, that's not what's in the best interest of our people, of our race. And so your personal freedoms might have to be curtailed or sacrificed for the greater good of your people. And this is something we all recognize, hopefully at least, within our family units, when all of us put aside our extreme radical self-interest for the greater good of our families, or we should. And our race is our extended family. So just like the family unit is governed, the race should be governed. And the government of the race is what you call National Socialism. Now, the problem with National Socialism, because it is imperfect, like all political systems, regardless of how it's instituted and implemented, is that it perhaps does not go far enough. It was a reaction to communism, a reaction to Marxism. If you look at the way it came to be in the 1920s and 30s, especially when you have dyed-in-the-wool Marxist and communist led by Jews taking over Bavaria and starting revolutions in Germany, you'll see that National Socialism, to a large degree, even though it's organic and natural and healthy, was also reactionary. And so we get into an alternative to National Socialism. If National Socialism was not a return to traditionalism enough as a reaction to communism, then what is? Is it possible that we could become more organic, more healthy, and more traditional than National Socialism? Well, sure. There are more organic and even more healthy political systems than National Socialism. The most healthy and natural should be based on the family. But what does that mean? When we look at the traditional definition of how a family unit is supposed to be run, with the husband as the head of the house and the wife having her specialized role and the children subservient to both of them, we see that before National Socialism, a healthy and organic form of government was actually monarchism. Not theocracy per se, but an enlightened theocratic monarchism. And that might sound downright medieval to you, but bear with me for a minute. If you think back, once again relying on my religious perspective and faith, to the Bible. Originally, the Israelites did not have a king. The Israelites had a system of judges who would decide cases between the people, and they had written laws, the Mosaic Code, based on the Ten Commandments, and the other lesser laws, which were dietary codes and health codes, which were situational ethics that were encoded for the best interest of the people, but could be changed as time progressed and they needed to be rewritten, as opposed to the Ten Commandments, which could not be changed, but which were literally set in stone. Twice, right? Set in stone. And the Mosaic Code was the way the judges would rule over the ancient Israelites. And then because they looked around at the people around them who had kings instead of judges, and they became jealous and envious of those political systems, the Israelites decided that they wanted to have a king of their own too. And God said, what is wrong with you people? I brought you out of bondage, you know, and made you my special chosen people. And why do you want a king? Why can't you just follow the judges and follow the law I've given you? If you follow the law I've given you and do what you're supposed to do, you don't need a king to tell you how to live your life. But then God recognized that his creation, as he had made it, was imperfect. And so we cannot always do the right thing without being told. I know we've all seen that, haven't we? Even within our own white nationalist movement, we've seen people every day who know what is right and what is wrong. They know what is true and what is untrue. They know that it's not cool to have Asian girlfriends. They know it's not right to defend homosexuals. They know that it's not kosher, no pun intended, to have Jews be in charge of any aspect of the movement. Yet they still allow it, and they blink at it, let it go on, give it a pass over and over again, even though they know it's wrong. because we are a sinful people, because we are a weak people, and we're unfortunately not strong enough or principled enough or don't have enough character or courage or integrity to do the right thing without somebody making us. That's why democracy does not work. Not even if it's a white democracy, not even if we were a 100% white country, democracy would not work. Because most people, frankly, are too stupid and too weak and too cowardly and gutless to do the right thing without somebody telling them to and literally making them to. So, a monarchy then. Well, God said, all right then, you're going to have some good kings and some bad kings. You're going to have some kings who follow my law and some kings who do not. And if you read the Old Testament, it was just a crapshoot. Whether or not a king was going to be righteous or unrighteous, good or evil. But at least when there was a good king, he could force the people who were mediocre and half of them corrupt to do the right thing. And when it was an evil king, God could judge and punish them all collectively. But God agreed because his people, us, were weak and cowardly and unable to govern themselves, unable literally to just follow his rules and simply do what he had told us to do without being forced to and told to, he agreed to let us have a king. And so he had one of his prophets choose Saul. And Saul was the first king. And he tried, but he was imperfect and failed. And then you have David. Now, some people who today advocate for a return to a monarchism believe, especially in the Christian identity tradition, that the Queen of England, Elizabeth, and her family are descended from the house of David, literally from the ancient Israelite royalty. And therefore, we should follow the Queen of England and her successor, whoever, I guess, Charles, if the timing is right, will be the king, because they believe that they are literally descended from David and therefore legitimately the ruler of the Israelites, us, those descendants of Adam, who are also descendants of Abraham and his grandson Jacob, who became known as Israel. So based on that part of Christian identity, the English monarchy would also be the monarchy, the king or queen, over all white Israelites. I'm not 100% sure about that.
When the British armies came from across the bounding main to attack our native shores in their sailing ships of war to establish tyranny by the orders of a tyrant king, Paul Revere cried his alarms and the people took up arms and they fired up their guns in the greens of Lexington. Soon the battles would be won and the bells of liberty would ring. Those men who fought to keep us free were not afraid to die. They drew their strength and courage from his power upon high and cried this battle cry, no king, no king, no king but King Jesus, the Messiah. No king, no king, no king but King Jesus, the Holy One of Israel. Last 100 years we have fainted from the fight for his liberty and might. We've been blinded by the lies, so we hardly know what's right from wrong. As the anti-Christian hordes and the global overlords now surround us, holy saints in the camp United States, just like Israel of old, we now find ourselves in Babylon. So now's the time for all good men to seek his face on high and bow to do his will on earth and rise up and defy the lie and cry this battle cry, no king, no king, no king but King Jesus, the Messiah. No king, no king, no king but King Jesus, the Holy One of Israel, the Holy One of Israel. So now's the time for all good men to seek his face on high and bow to do his will on earth and rise up and defy the lie and cry this battle cry, no king, no king, no king but King Jesus, the Messiah. No king, no king, no king but Yehoshua, the Holy One of Israel, the Holy One of Israel.
I do know that a lot of people cannot just do the right thing without being told. And I do know that in terms of being traditional, a monarchy is less of a reaction and more organic and natural and healthy than National Socialism. But what you get into, as you guys know, those of you who've read classical literature, how do you make sure you have a good king? Do you just rely on the fact that you're going to have a king that's chosen and anointed by God like the ancient Israelites did? And even then they might go bad like they often did. Or are you going to try to choose one somehow and set up a system of dynastic succession or trial by combat or natural selection? Or are you going to allow it to be hereditary? You know, Plato was one of the best Greek philosophers at trying to write about the best political system of government. And as you know, in ancient Greece, you have Socrates, who began life as a bricklayer and then in his 30s actually embraced philosophy. He was forced to drink hemlock eventually for corrupting the youth. We've heard that before, haven't we? And then his student, Plato, wrote a book called The Republic, as he was using it to use Socrates' teachings to teach his students, including Aristotle, who ended up teaching Alexander the Great in succession. But in The Republic, Plato designs what he considers to be his perfect government, which he calls utopia. And he talks about the philosopher king concept, a philosopher king being one who is a strong intellectual ruler, but ruthless in destroying corruption, in wiping out impurity, but who balances his anger with justice and mercy. But the philosopher king was modeled after Socrates, and as we know, as much as he respected his mentor and teacher, those guys are few and far between. As a matter of fact, the way that Plato wrote the pyramid scheme of philosopher kings being at the top of the perfect government in his republic, it's more or less like a biblical parallel to Jesus' parables, where he tells a story, you know, that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get into heaven. Not saying it's impossible for a rich man to get into heaven, but saying it's really hard. So hard it's almost impossible. So Plato in the Republic is saying that, you know, to actually have a good king and to ensure you're going to have a sustaining system of justice that is righteous and dignified and fair and just is not quite, but almost impossible. So the utopian ideal espoused by Plato in his Republic of the perfect monarchy system, it was almost, he was saying, an impossibility. Not that it wouldn't work out, but to make sure that it would be over several generations sustainable, really hard to even fashion. And I certainly don't claim to be as wise as Plato, so I don't think that I could do a better job than him in describing the perfect political system. And once again, this is a problem, along with religious faith, that our people have been discussing amongst themselves for thousands of years. Because people have been trying to describe the things that they know are bigger than themselves for thousands of years, and they've been trying to form a more just and humane government or a better way of ruling one another and each other for thousands of years ever since the beginning of time. We are not any closer today than we were 10,000 years ago, when people who were just as smart as us, just as smart as we modern humans, asked the same questions and sometimes continually over and over again reinventing the wheel, came up with the same answers.
Deutschland! Sieg Heil! Deutschland! Sieg Heil!
If you'd like to attend a conference which has no Jewish speakers, or no homosexual speakers, or no race-mixing speakers, then I encourage you to register now for the Stormfront Conference 2017 in Eastern Tennessee, coming up September the 30th. I'll be there. You can meet me in person, as well as Don Black and David Duke and other racial patriots who spent their lifetime working for the survival and advancement of our people. That's the Stormfront 2017 conference coming up September the 30th. Register now at stormfront.org or through email to don.black@stormfront.org. That's don.black@stormfront.org for the Stormfront 2017 conference in Eastern Tennessee, September the 30th. I'll see you there. There is no perfect system of government, but because we cannot have the perfect, just like when it comes to DNA test, does not mean that we should not strive for the good. Because we cannot design, much less implement, a perfect, faultless, human-ruled, because humans are imperfect and faulted, political system, does not mean we should not try to get a better one than what we have today, certainly. And so I think that, I've been writing about this last week, and we've been talking about it, we should, when we have a white ethnostate again, which I believe will be in our lifetimes, we should have a white ethnostate where the local politics can be ruled through a kind of limited democracy, where you have one vote per household, which is earned through contributions to the community, so that that one vote per household is cast by those who actually have a stake in the future of that community, who have an interest in it based on their own contributions to it, and on a larger level, on a provincial or a state level, and certainly on a national level. The universal suffrage should be limited to those who have done military or civil service to the greater good, to the larger community, to the people itself. That is, because I envision it being a national socialist state, whether it's a monarchy or not, doing service to the race. And that also is not completely unique to racialist politics. If you think of the design that Robert Heinlein, the science fiction writer, put forward in his book and then later in the movie in an encapsulated form, Starship Troopers, where only veterans were allowed to vote. The logic of this is that people who have a stake in their community are those who have contributed to it, and you're not being ruled by parasites, or as the German leader Otto von Bismarck said, you don't have a household that's being ruled by the nursery. Now, whether we're talking about Swinburne and Bayesian or Platonic forms of government or religious faith, I believe that we can develop an organic perspective to get back to something more traditional, more healthy, more real for our people, not cosmopolitan, not fed to us by foreign alien minds, which only want to corrupt us so they'll have camouflage to hide amongst us. I believe that we can have a white ethnostate again, one which will not be perfect because we are not perfect, but one which, as we await God's kingdom here on earth, can be more like it than what we've had now and what we've had before. Now, how do we get there? Well, we know that it's going to take a crisis trigger scenario before we have the balkanization of America and the opportunity to have the kind of vacuum at the federal level which will make possible the emergence of white ethnostates, plural, in the North American continent.
Become a person of influence in your community. Stop being a spectator. Join the Shield Wall Network today. You know it's coming. Be ready first. The Shield Wall Network is waiting for you.
This morning, Julian Assange gave us some hint of how that might happen. And Julian Assange, as you all know, is the founder of WikiLeaks. And he writes constantly about the corruption of our current governmental system. This morning, he sent out a series of 8 tweets which discuss something that really pertains to our worldview, and that is the changing racial demographics in the United States of America today. Julian Assange wrote that whenever any nation, using the original organic sense of the term, gets below 70% in terms of their majority founding population, that politics becomes ethnicized. In other words, whenever the founding population of any country through immigration or conquest gets below the 70% mark, then politics in that country becomes racialized. And with whites being less than 70%, around 65% now in the U.S., that's happened here. And he pointed that out. Now, he said that because, you know, 65% of whites voted for Trump, those whites who remain tied to the system may be enough to ensure that since Democrats have strongly embraced identity politics as a coalition of minorities for the next several years, for maybe the next decade, Republicans who are kind of, to paraphrase another guy, the last bastion of implicit white identity, Republicans may be able to maintain an electoral majority on the national level, or at least on the state level in a large area of the country in the central flyover red states in the heartland. But ultimately, there's going to be a tipping point where that is no longer sustainable. And Julian Assange said this morning that that is really the end of democracy or electoral politics as demographics shift. In 8 tweets, he basically correlated everything that we've been saying here on the Roper Report for the last several months, and it's really worth looking into if you're on Twitter. But he drew the allusion to what's happening in Malaysia, where the Malay dominant majority population is about the same percentage as we are here. And they're being flooded with Muslim immigrants from neighboring Indonesia. And they probably have a similar fate to our own. We don't often think about the Malaysians or the Indonesians, but nature's laws are intractable and universal. They apply to all peoples and all nations universally as well. So here in the United States of America, according to Julian Assange this morning, because we're below 70%, politics on both sides of the aisle is going to become more and more racialized, with the Democrats representing a coalition of non-white minorities, the Republicans by default representing the declining white majority, and for the next few years, as whites become more and more alienated and dispossessed and reacting to that, more and more alarmed and polarized, voting more and more racially as they try not to give up hope in the electoral process, which has already abandoned them and cannot save them from their fate. For the next several years, then, you'll see a growing racial divide electorally between the political parties, whites on one side and a coalition of non-whites and other fringe minorities on the other. Now, what this leads to is one of the last subjects I want to discuss for today's broadcast. There's still continuing talk on the left and by Democrats of trying to impeach Donald Trump. And that's not just Maxine Waters talk. They want to remove him from office. They would like to stage a legal impeachment and removal, or failing that, some are even talking about having a coup d'etat. And several months ago, when they were talking about the coup d'etat, I actually wrote an article saying that if they staged an impeachment and removal of Trump or a coup d'etat and removed him from office, they drug him off of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue in shackles and handcuffs, that could lead to a civil war in the United States. At least that's what the left was fearing at that time. This morning I wrote that I believe, based on his actions and inactions since then, not enough whites still think of Donald Trump as their savior, as I and many of you listeners never did, but not enough whites any longer think of Donald Trump as being their savior to actually stand up and stop that. They would not be willing to do more than bitch on the internet, maybe make some snarky posts, and maybe have a couple of public rallies somewhere on the civic national level. None of them are going to pick up a gun and fight back if Donald Trump is impeached or driven out of office or if he was assassinated. None of them would fight back. Possibly a few, but not enough to make a difference. Not just because they have lost faith in Trump and they no longer see him as a savior and they know that he's now a civic nationalist and he's completely part of Zog himself and always was, frankly. Just a little side note, just like I told you a year ago. But because they really don't have it in themselves, absent a collapse, to take on that responsibility. As long as the lights are still on and there's still a ball game on TV and beer in the fridge, it's not going to happen, folks. It's going to take that crisis trigger scenario to remove the federal power at the national level through that vacuum occurring through abdication or through collapse before it's going to happen. That's what we have to have. What cannot fly must fall, and what is falling, we should still push and say fall faster. But gravity, it's not just a good idea, you know, it's also the law. We just have to make sure it doesn't come crashing down on our heads when it happens. So let me ask you, listeners, please respond by sending an email to roper_billy@yahoo.com. We'll discuss it next week. How many of you who listen to the Roper Report on RadioArian.com would be willing to fight if Donald Trump was impeached and removed from office? How many of you, of my listeners, would be willing to go to war if Donald Trump was forcibly removed through a coup d'etat? How many of you would not even get up out of your computer chairs? See my point? Our goal then, our task, is to convince our fellow whites that they are not going to vote their way out of this mess, and they cannot get salvation from the electoral process or seek to petition the government for a redress of grievances through the ballot box. It's going to require more than that. I'm not advocating revolution because I know it's no more likely than advocating that I'm going to climb up on my roof and sprout wings and fly, as much as I might like to. It's going to require something happening that we cannot control, that we cannot bring about ourselves, mainly because we don't have the will to. And that's sad. But not to blackpill you, that's the reality. Nobody wants to go first. Everybody's saying, I dare you to. And I'm not even saying, I dare you to. I'm just saying, we're going to have to convince ourselves and our fellow white patriots that we're not going to be able to take the easy way out here. It's going to require a complete collapse of the government on national level, whatever that entails, for us to regain our freedom. So email me at roper_billy@yahoo.com and tell me if you think that Donald Trump will be impeached, or if you think there will be a coup d'etat, or if you think that the Democrats and the moderate Republicans and the establishment understand now that they can do what they want to with this government, and none of us are going to fight them on it. Literally not going to fight them on it. And so they can just block Trump's administration and everything they might want to do until 2020, when they can replace him quietly without a shot being fired by one of their own once again, assuming that Trump wasn't one of their own all along, which is another question. So, until next time, this is Billy Roper for The Roper Report, Billy's Balkanization blog, reminding you that you can go to the roperreportsite.wordpress.com and the roperreport.whitenationalist.net each day in between now and our next podcast to read daily updated news and political commentary that you will not find anywhere else. And you can also help the Cover Our People with Love pro-white charity help us help our people by sending your generous non-tax-deductible contributions of yarn or quilting material or fabric or gently used clothing or the funds to buy them for our people to P.O. Box 1937, Mountain View, Arkansas, 72560. Or you can help with those donations through PayPal to roper_billy@yahoo.com. As always, as I tell you each week, take it to heart. Think racially, act locally, but no matter what, keep it white.
Nazi group protesting at the German embassy ran into some opposition today. Police had to separate the groups of demonstrators. 9 Eyewitness News reporter Dave Stander says things got ugly as soon as the white supremacists walked off their bus.
The flashpoint was reached immediately. The white supremacists found themselves under attack as they walked toward the German embassy. This guy they're talking about in the middle getting the worst of the battle is Billy Roper, a membership coordinator with the National Alliance, a well-known group that wants to unify the white race.
Is this a black free speech to you, the nation's capital? When we try to demonstrate on behalf of free speech, there's a violent reaction by the communist, by the socialist, by the homosexual activist, and by the so-called anti-racist.
Some of these people will kill people. They support murderers. They support hate crime, violence.
That's their goal. They want to kill everyone. So how is that free speech when you're oppressing others?
The National Alliance chose the German embassy as the site of the demonstration because of Germany's crackdown on neo-Nazis.
Well, the white race is endangered because across the country and across the world, every day and every year, the white percentage of the world's population decreases. This is a statistical fact. No one can deny that.
Racist, sexist, anti-gay! Nazis, go! Go away!
In the end, two people were arrested, charged with simple assault. And Billy Roper was treated on the scene for his injuries.
Can you hear the student band? I think they're getting out of hand. Will you know what happened to those who complain? We've got to stop them seeing light. Let them think it's all right. Cause the fire outside to keep them entertained. Well, the wells have not run dry. Do we really need to lie? We'll say it's a national emergency. We're at a wedding full of clowns. And we'll kick them while they're down. Get the banks control, cause they are friends to me. Let's go and find a better place. We'll call it New America. Won't it be a lovely place to be? Imperial material, the mind of New America. The best idea since democracy.
You are listening to Radio Aryan. for an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioArian.com.